David, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's such an honor to have you. Tell us your story just briefly, like what's up? What have you been working
on? Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I always like to describe my story as a world of three different worlds. One, the world of not enough, where I was born with a single mom who used to pack my dinner in a paper bag after teaching the second grade and filling turnstiles at convenience stores with greeting cards just so we could eat. And in that world of not enough, I always felt like a victim. I always felt like everything was happening to me. And although my mom had the wishes and the objective of doctor, lawyer, or failure for me, I just wanted to be rich. I wanted to buy my mom a house. I wanted financial security. I wanted to prove to everyone that I was enough by the amount of money that I made. And sure enough, the first way I decided to do that was to be a professional athlete. But after getting run over by Christian Okoye in college, lying on my back, telling myself, doctor, lawyer, or failure, I knew that's not how I was going to make the money to give me financial freedom. So I decided, since I didn't like hospitals, that I should be a lawyer. And so I went to intentionally went to Tulane University for law school because they had the number one oil and gas program, and oil and gas litigators made the most money out of law school, and I wanted to be rich. Now, the irony is I did get a $150,000 job offer plus bonus in 1992 to be an oil and gas litigator. But instead, despite my mom telling me the internet was a fad, despite Justice Scalia saying nobody would ever do research on a computer, I decided to sell legal research online instead of being an oil and gas litigator. And 9 months out of law school, I was a millionaire. And in 1995, we exited for $3.4 billion. And that set my life from the world of to me as a victim to for me, an optimist. But I didn't realize that optimism still could have scarcity involved. And everything was for me. It was a trade, a negotiation. And as I made more money and elevated my career to be CEO of Samsung's first phone division, their data division, and then to run Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, the most notable sports agency in the world, where they made the movie Jerry Maguire about our firm, I started to lose my values. And I started to create behaviors that weren't aligned in my divine direction. I started to lose my faith. And sure enough, when you combine those types of action, words, thoughts, beliefs, and feelings, bad things are going to happen. You have too much dis-ease and not enough ease, not enough inspiration. And so from the world of not enough to the world of just enough for me, I lost everything. And the moment that holds true in my heart, in my mind, is when I had to go tell my mom that I lost everything. It was going to come as a big surprise because I was so embarrassed and shameful. I never told my mom I was having financial difficulty, let alone losing everything, including her home. So I was now faced with telling her that I lost over $100 million and her home, and she needed to move. So when I knocked on our door, I immediately started to cry. I could barely get words out. I was like a four-year-old who was hysterical, and you, as a parent, are trying to say, what's the matter? Well, that was me at the door. My mom's like, what's the matter? Are you okay? Is your wife okay? Are the kids okay? Mom, I lost everything. I lost your home. You need to move. Oh, you need money? No, Mom, I don't think you heard me. I lost everything. I need a lot of money, but you need to move. I lost your home. They're going to evict you. Oh, what can I do to help you? Mom, why is God punishing me? She said, oh, son, God doesn't punish. He only protects, promotes, loves, and perfects. You have to figure out how. I said, Mom, I don't believe in God. And she said, oh, son, you believe in God, but you believe in the wrong God. And so on that day, she shifted my paradigm back to wisdom and faith, which shortened the distance of resistance between me and God, between me and my highest self. And I started to walk in the divine direction. I started to align the activities, the thoughts, the words, the prayers, the beliefs, and the feelings with my divine direction. I started to align the meaning of my past the historical relevances, setbacks, failures, mistakes, successes with my divine direction. And I've been doing that for 20 years, and it has allowed me to make more money than I've ever dreamed of for the sake of helping others and having fun. And that's where my mission of empowering over a billion people to teach them how to make a lot of money for the sake of helping others and having fun.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of entrepreneurs, and by the way, thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful and so relevant now, I think maybe more than ever, as you see leaders and CEOs and entrepreneurs thinking that the money is the end goal. Like getting rich is the end goal. And as soon as that happens, you're going to be happy, you're going to be fine, you're going to be content, you're going to feel like you're good enough. And you and I both know plenty of billionaires and very successful CEOs who are very unhappy. And it's not actually the meaning of life to get as many zeros in your bank account as possible. So once you were there with your mom and she told you this and you had this really kind of awakening experience around it, at what point did you realize you're going to be doing what you've been doing for the past 20 years?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because my perspective shifted from I'll be happy when to for the sake of what. And so for me, what immediately changed was I started to detach my emotions from all the things that I had grasped onto. I'll be happy when I make $1 million. I'll be happy when I buy a new house. I'll be happy when all of that had left me. And I started using behaviors as my guidepost. And I categorized my behaviors every day. Is this behavior? And behaviors included to me what I was doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing. So I'd say to myself, is this thought aligned with where I want to be or better, or is it interfering with it? And I would use God's prayer of I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? And that entire paradigm shift shifted everything into my unbelievably fulfilled, passionate, purposeful life. And I really have been a master in behaviors and being able to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential. I stopped looking for what I didn't want, what I was missing, what I didn't have, what other people wanted for me, what social media wanted for me. And I stuck to, I am, what am I doing to interfere with it?
So we talk a lot about self-leadership, and if you can't lead yourself, you can't lead others, right? How did you start leading yourself? And, you know, I asked that kind of in two ways. One, how did you lead yourself back to your faith, which I think is a really interesting story. And then two, like to your life's purpose, right? Which is integrated with your faith. And so maybe let's start with the faith one. Like, how did you lead yourself back to your faith?
Well, when I started to realize that uncertainty exists everywhere and that I don't know what I don't know. And the longer that I go, the less I know. And every day I was faced with evidence that wasn't available to show me that I'd get to where I wanted to be or better. And even worse, every day, most of the evidence that was present was contrary to where I wanted to be or better. And instead of feeling punished, I started using gratitude to find the light, the love, and the lesson in the evidence. I started using forgiveness to give me ease for all the mistakes that I was making. I started using accountability to learn, to say, what did I do to be responsible? What did I do to attract this? What did I do to participate in the perception? And what am I supposed to learn from it? And so instead of just communicating with those other people around me, I started communicating with God, omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing, infinite, abundant, unified system of thought, a God that was protecting, promoting, loving, and perfecting me, and allowing God to come through me. Someone said, Dave Meltzer is the pencil for God. I thought that was a big compliment. I'm God's pencil. And in other words, I allow the inspiration through effective communication. And so when I started living by those values, I started to bring faith back into my life so that every day when the evidence was contrary to where I wanted to be, there was no quit in me because I knew who was walking with me and what I had inside of me. And I always say it is not just wisdom, because I do ask a lot of really smart people for help, but faith that shortens the distance of resistance that we create for ourselves. The more at ease, the more inspired we are, the more we live by our values and start to be honest and repetitive, the greater the power we have. And, you know, 20 years, I've been really consistent. I've had my slips and days that I've made exemptions to my non-negotiable behaviors, but never twice in a row, never stack the losses, and live in those values and remind not only myself, but every people around me about gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration.
How do you think AI changes this whole conversation? Obviously, it's something that everybody's thinking about. Every CEO, every leader is thinking about how to utilize it to optimize their companies and all of that type of stuff. But how do you think it changes humanity and exactly what you just described?
It's such a good question, Clint, and very insightful. And it's a very important question. And I give it a lot of thought as a person who, you know, is chairman of Napoleon Hill and has a leadership role. My philosophy, true or not, is that AI makes humans more human. It also devalues knowledge, is increases the value of wisdom. Because now knowledge has become a commodity. I mean, I use AI every day, and the amount of knowledge that I have is unbelievable for me. And so I believe that AI allows humans to be more human. It'll amplify our humanity, but it does devalue knowledge and increases the value of wisdom. So the first time, it doesn't matter what age you are, it matters how much wisdom. And remember, wisdom and faith are the two components that allow us to shorten this distance. So AI is here to, one, to give access to knowledge to everyone, unbelievable power of knowledge, but it also increases the value of wisdom and faith, because those people that have wisdom and faith will be able to utilize the knowledge in the divine direction.
That is so, that's such an interesting way to look at it. I wonder, as you see like the AI backlash and, you know, the protests around the data centers that are happening all around the country. There's one happening in my home state here. Somebody you might know, Kevin O'Leary, is trying to build a data center here in the great state of Utah. And obviously that's made national news. And I just wonder if you think the way that, I'm currently thinking, which is there seems to be a bit of a crisis of leadership around how people talk about AI. I wonder if our leaders talked about AI in the way that you just did, if it would be as wildly unpopular, and if we would be seeing these protests, and if we would be seeing it. So I wonder how, what role you think leadership plays, both in the private and public sector, on shaping how we as citizens and humans kind of confront this new age of technology, where really, you know, we're the most brilliant people on earth, thanks to Claude or ChatGPT.
Yeah. One of the difficulties, and another thing that I study besides faith every day, is I study time. And understanding time to me is extremely important. And so what makes leadership so difficult within the context or subject matter of AI is that time is accelerated exponentially because of AI. And so when we were younger, we could make decisions and we could see and plan the AAA strategy. We could get alignment. We could take action. We could prepare for adjustment. And it made decision-making and leadership a lot easier than it does today. As you can imagine, I remember I was consulting for some stadiums being built when, you know, a lot of these new stadiums were being built. And because I had a background in venture capital and technology, which is why the reason I got hired to be CEO of Lee Steinberg Sports Entertainment is he saw the future of sports and venture and technology. And he was absolutely right. That is where we are today. But I had a difficult time as a leader on that project deciphering what technology to put into the stadium, because it took 5 years to build a stadium. And the technology that was available today was not what would be available when the stadium was complete. It's even worth, by the way, for military ships. It's 17 years for an aircraft carrier. Could you imagine, even back then, planning for an open-ended technology architecture for 17 years in the future? That exists for almost all decisions, but it's not 17 years. It's 17 days, or at most a month. I mean, sometimes I get off an interview and what I was talking about already changed because somebody invented something with some vibe code app in 30 seconds. 30 seconds, Clint. And so what makes leadership so difficult and why there still would be protesters, even if my perspective or your perspective was shared to the masses, is that time, emotion, and value is changing too quickly. And it makes a leader, it makes someone who is a leader put into a very difficult situation because there's no time for alignment. There's time for action, but no time for adjustment.
Yeah, that's a great way to put that. What does a typical day look like for you?
I'm glad you asked that as well. So for me, I'm very devotional with my time. So here's how I look at my day. First of all, my life is from the time my heart starts till it stops. So one of the priorities of my life is to keep my heart beating because that's the only thing that determines the human experience. And then I believe God gives a guarantee to all of us that you get 24 hours a day. Every day of your life, except for the last day, he'll cheat you. And so when I know that God's guarantee is 24 hours, I also know that in that 24 hours, all there is uncertainty. The only certainty is the 24 hours. So I try to take a control of certainty by having non-negotiable behavior. Non-negotiable behavior is defined of no matter what the circumstances are, assign time to this activity. So for example, I assign a minimum amount of time to my sleep, no matter what the circumstances of the day are. I assign a minimum amount of time to my health, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the weather, the delays, no matter what the interest rates are, I don't care. I'm getting this done. I assign time to a minimum amount of time to my family. 7 days a week, I assign time to my faith, the study of time, the study of relativity or meaning of time, and of course, finance. And that equals about 12 hours a day, which the majority is sleeping. So it's not hard to be that devotional. And notice I said the word devotional because a lot of people think that discipline gets them into where they want to be or better. But so many people are disciplined working, but they never make money. They're disciplined working and never spend time with their family. They're disciplined working and they never spend time on their health. But if you ask them why they're working so hard, they'll tell you what? To make money, to spend time with their family, and to be healthy. This is silly. I'm devotional. That means that I'm not only disciplined in sleep, in my family, the health, the faith, the study of time, relativity, and finance, but I'm in alignment with the divine, with where I want to be or better. And I'm devotional, more than disciplined, every day. And like I said, if I miss one of my marks, I just make sure it gets super priority the next day. I never miss twice. And from that non-negotiable behavior, 90% of my progress is truly from the non-negotiable. Even though most people, it's all about the circumstantial, especially now with AI, like I was saying, that's at best 10% of my progress comes from circumstantial behavior. What I think I know, what I think is best, what I think will work. None of that really matters. You know what does work? Assigning attention and intention every day to your sleep, your health, your family, your faith, the study of time, relativity, and finance. If you do that for 12 hours a day, you can do whatever you want with the other 12 hours of awake time.
Tell me about this book, which is aptly titled and greatly titled, Don't Do Business with Dicks. Tell me about this thing.
Well, first of all, the subtitle was the title, How to Ditch Toxicity from Your Life and Surround Yourself with Positive Influences. And Simon & Schuster, I've written many books, as you know, Clint. I have to be honest, when people at the airport walk by Connected to Goodness, compassionate capitalism, unstoppable, creating the life you love. They didn't grab it off the shelf. So those books sold because people read them and then referred people because they were good books. Simon & Schuster said, David, you got to name this book something that people will buy on the shelves. It's okay that the inside doesn't match the title. So I stole a line from Lee Steinberg, don't do business with dicks. And I just have to tell you, it sells off the shelves. It sells out of my hands. If I walk with it at the airport, people, hey, where'd you get that book? And they start telling me stories about some jerk, you know, that they did business with and what a mistake it was. So there, I think the guy at Simon & Schuster said, you can't sell a secret.
That's a great point. Yeah. The book is super eye-catching. I mean, the title is, it's amazing. I want to be respectful of your time. So we end every interview with the same question. And that is, at CEO.com, we believe the chances one gives is just as important as the chances one takes. When you hear that, who gave you a chance to get you to where you are today?
Beyond my mom, who gave me every chance. And I get choked up because I lost my mom recently. And in business, it would be Lee Steinberg. Lee Steinberg gave me an opportunity to work within the context of the inner circle, the most influential circle, the billionaires, the millionaires, the entrepreneurs, the celebrities, the athletes, the entertainers around the Super Bowl, the Pro Bowl, the Masters, Kentucky Derby, the Breeders' Cup, the ESPYs, the Emmys, the Oscars, the Grammys, and gave me access to what even billionaires couldn't afford. So for sure, my mom, in my overall life and in my career, Lee Steinberg.
David, thank you so much for coming on the show. What an honor to have you, seriously.
Thank you, and I look forward to doing more with Silicon Slopes and you. You guys are incredible. What a great podcast, and please come on my podcast.
Will do. Thank you.